Good afternoon, folks. You're listening to KPLO San Francisco 89.5. Up next is Reality Sandwich with Dr. Rafe Biggs and Rob Ruta Yoga. Stay tuned.
You're listening to KPOO 89.5 FM, San Francisco. This is a Reality Sandwich. My name is Dr. Rafe Eric Biggs, and every couple of weeks we explore themes around consciousness, change, and transformation. Today's show is with Patty Byrne, who's the Executive and Artistic Director of Sins Invalid, a show that explores themes between sexuality and disability. Welcome, Patty.
Thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah. So why don't you share with the listeners a little bit about your background and a little bit about your work that you have come into today?
Sure. Again, my name is Patty Byrne, and I have the honor of working with a pretty rock star group of people and on this project called Sins Invalid. My background specifically is kind of, you know, grounded in the social justice movement. I've done a lot of work around racial justice, around LGBT community building, around exploring kind of creative voice through the arts. I've done work in film and in writing, and actually also have been a therapist for a brief stint in my life. I've kind of done a lot of work mm-hmm. around healing and liberatory practices. But Sins Invalid actually is a culmination of many of those expressions. We started in 2006, so this will be this upcoming performance in April will be our fifth performance. Super exciting. And we started because really, and when I say we, there's a group of four of us that started mm-hmm. it. Leroy Moore, Todd Herman, Amanda Kossler, and I started because we really saw no place where there was, folks with disabilities, particularly disabled people of color, were exploring our bodies in a radical way. I mean, there's a lot of like rehab sexuality stuff in rather dry academic settings. Mm-hmm. It's not hot at all.
A little boring.
Yeah. Just
right.
A little. And so we wanted to do something that was actually, you know, both politically grounded and super hot. And so it
right
was
on.
Really, really fun to start off. And we've been doing it since.
That's so great. I'm so excited because as you know, my work is a lot around sexuality and disability. And when I had my neck injury 7 years ago, You know, the first questions I asked myself is, gosh, can I ever walk again? And the second was, can I ever enjoy pleasurable sex again? And in my research, I could find very little resources out there besides some academic dry, you know, videos that really gave me the resources and the creative ideas that I had around how can I express myself sexually.
Right, right.
Yeah. So when I came across Sins Invalid, I was really excited. And so it's my first time meeting you, and I'm just excited to have you on the show and learn about what you're up to and, yeah, and bring this work out into the world.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's amazing the way that we're kind of in the culture, even though we're inundated by sexuality everywhere all the time, mm-hmm. it's also a really, really narrow spectrum of what is hot and how can we express ourselves. You know,
right.
It's like if you're not between the pounds of like 110 and 130 for, you know, someone, you know, that's female bodied, or if you're not, you know, between the height of like whatever, like 5'11 and 6'3 and, you know, certain breadth, if you're, you know, male bodied, then you're not in the game. And
right.
it's kind of absurd. It's like, okay, who, oh, I can't swear on that radio. Okay. So who actually is like that? You know, like that's like a really 2% narrow
2% of people that actually fit into that category.
Right.
I'm saying, right. So like the, you know, and the truth is like being in a body in and of itself is essential and, you know, depending upon how we experience it, like hot reality, and we all have sexual expressions and personas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's as many ways to get down as there are people. So
that's,
you know,
right.
It's very much about how do we then, you know, do that out of respect for all bodies. You know, how do we actually elevate our sexualities and respect everyone's sexuality and embodiment? And, you know, and it's interesting because we're a public performance, so we kind of tread that line of how do we do it respectfully and not exploitatively.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, it's a lot of fun conversations, actually, around Sins Invalid community as well, around how do we do that in a responsible way, but how do we also really really put ourselves out as whole beings, including our sexuality.
Beautiful. How did you come up with the name Sins Invalid? Where did that come from?
We're playing with a lot of different phrases around sexuality, and it started off kind of tacky. and there's just four of us, and we're all kind of wordsmiths, and it was literally during a meeting, and we just kept playing with different, you know, sounds of, you know, slippery and blah, 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 whatever. And you know, but we landed on Sins Invalid for a couple, I think, obvious reasons. One, you know, people with disabilities have historically been called invalids,
right?
And so, but in fact, the idea, I mean, which is absurd, like what body is, you know, illegal or invalid, like that's ridiculous. Like we're
right.
all, you know, awesome. and then so kind of what actually is an invalid idea is the idea that anything, is a sin per se, that, cause you know, one of the frameworks, and it's really interesting. One of the frameworks, that we've explored with one group of artists in 2008, I think, was the fact that many of our birth stories or the understanding of our bodies as non-normative bodies was framed as sin. Whether or not people came from like religious backgrounds, right? People's parents felt guilty if they had, you know, kids with disabilities. Like, oh, what did I do? Why are they not normative? Or if someone acquires a disability later in life, oh, what did they do that this is their tragic like consequence? And it's really kind of an absurd throwback framework around disability that somehow any way of being is non-normative. Just like how could being queer be non-normative? Or
mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's just part of what it means to be human. Right. So the idea, again, is just to play on that concept a little bit. And Sins Invalid sounds cool. We know our nickname would be Sins.
Yeah. Yeah, so. It's great. I love it. Tell me a little bit about yourself since we've just met. What is your disability?
I have a neuromuscular disability, supposedly. I mean, I'm not so much into the medical,
right.
you know, framework. But, yeah, I mean, I certainly have. My muscles are weak compared to folks that don't have my body.
And have you had your disability your whole life?
Yeah.
Or is, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whole
yeah.
life, yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up a little mm-hmm. girl in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, there's a lot of, I mean, obviously there's tons of institutionalized oppression and ableism. And, you know, of course I had to deal with a lot of struggle against internalized ableism, meaning, and by ableism I mean kind of structures which privilege people with more normative bodies and relegate to the margins people with mm-hmm. disabilities. So there's a lot of ways in which I had to kind of struggle against, you know, concepts of
mm-hmm.
that were essentially undermining my sense of self and my body.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a way in which also not having some of the expectations around sexuality that are given typically to little girls, I had a lot of latitude because usually little girls are taught like this is how you have to be. Mm-hmm. But there was such like a cultural silence around my body that I was able to kind of frame my body as me and my pleasure as me, which I'm very grateful for.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was.
Kind of got to make up your own mind about it.
Yeah, to some extent. Yeah. I mean, once I kind of decolonized my brain, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And how were your parents around your disability and around sex in general? Was sex taught something that is, you know, taboo, and or were they more like giving you more self-expression around it, or how is that shaped?
Well, my parents are rather old school.
Yeah.
And you know, my mother is from Japan and my father's okay. from Haiti.
Wow. Interesting.
And so I'm first generation born in the United States. And so there really wasn't a lot of discussion around sexuality
yep.
amongst any mm-hmm. of my, you know, amongst my parents and my siblings and I.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned the way I think most youth learn is from random cultural artifacts, like
yep.
anything from, you know, dirty books to porn to, you know, conversations in the schoolyard kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, much of which doesn't reflect my body as, or didn't reflect my body, certainly as a child with a disability that was exposed to, you know, all kind of cultural conversation around sex. But as an adolescent, certainly didn't reflect me very clearly.
Mm.
So a lot of it, honestly, was self-education. I'm so grateful to be in the Bay Area.
Mm.
And that the idea of sex positivity
yes.
was developing as I was developing, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, we are really blessed to live in the Bay Area.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I moved back to the Bay Area. I was down in San Diego for 3 years doing a lot of kind of intense rehab. And but it was just like I was trying to cultivate this work around sexuality and disability. And it was frustrating. So mm-hmm. I was so excited to move back. And then I heard about your work. And it's just there's, you know, great disabled you know, population here, people living with disabilities,
mm-hmm.
and there's a great sex positive community.
Yeah.
So it's a great mecca to bring this work out in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was noticing when you came in, besides your cuteness and funky outfit, you have some pretty cool tattoos. And we're tattoo fans around here. So do you have any stories behind them? Any meanings? Or are they just fun things you put on your body to celebrate?
That's funny. Let's see. One of them is I used to be a rowdy youth.
Yep.
So one of them was when I shed some of my rowdiness, I kind of commemorated it with a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you're younger, you don't always take care of yourself well.
Right.
And so when I decided to focus a little bit more on honoring my body and not like abusing it so much, I got a tattoo, which was a Mayan anti-authority symbol, actually. And then I got a quarter sleeve, which is kind of honoring both the Haitian and Japanese heritage. It's a Japanese scroll with a Haitian voodoo symbol in the center, which is around the meeting of the human and the divine, essentially. Yeah, I'm getting a few more actually coming up to you. I want to see y'all's tattoo. I feel.
All right. Yeah.
Yep. More to come for us, too.
Yeah, cool. Mine are a little covered up right now, but...
Cool.
We'll share tattoos with each other a little bit later.
Yeah.
It's always fun.
Yeah.
Great. So let's see. So many questions. Let's see. Tell me just a little bit about some of the things, like in Sins Invalid, what are some of the types of performances you do? Or what are some of the stories people tell? Or what is the different kinds of performance art?
Well, Sins Invalid has a kind of broad program.
Mm-hmm.
We have what we consider our cultural work, and we also have what we've considered a movement building program.
Mm.
Right. So in the cultural work, we do workshops in the community every couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
That can range from movement workshop, like Rodney Bell did one once. Antoine Hunter did one recently. And those are for, you know, whether or not people have disabilities, people need to, you know, be grounded in our bodies. Even somebody who, for example, doesn't have a lot of movement from their neck down, like it's a lot of it's through our intention and moving energy.
Yes.
So it can be everywhere from, you know, someone who has significant mobility impairment to people that are experienced dancers will come to the workshop. So, mm-hmm. you know, we'll do movement, we'll do writing. There's a lot of writing because we're all verbal and like to talk and mm-hmm. and express ourselves however we do. And so we do writing workshops, poetry workshops, performance-based workshops, vocal workshops, again, for a whole range of folks. That's pretty awesome to see in the workshops. You know, for example, in a vocal workshop, someone with, you know, who's an experienced vocalist all the way to somebody who is maybe shy about their vocalization because they have cerebral palsy and they speak differently. You know, right. So again, it's like a range of like, how do we get down? You know?
Yeah, that's great.
And so, you know, we do that. We also do our annual performances. And we also have an artist in residence program. So we have 8 artists that are having a performance this coming January, this month, good Christ. This month, January 28th, 29th, at the Mission Cultural Center. And I can give specifics about that. That's going to be really exciting. And we're doing an annual show in April. All of this kind of feeds into building community as well as just this mm-hmm. out-picturing. Like, of course, we want performances, but we also want people to network because, again, there's so much isolation around disability and so much isolation around real experience of sexuality.
Yes.
Not like porn sexuality, but actual real sexuality.
Right. Yeah, that was one of the things when I was doing my own research. It's like, yeah, I read a lot of, you know, kind of academic stuff, but I'm like, no, I want to hear from people. Like, what are their challenges and what are their successes mm-hmm. around sexuality so I can learn from them?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I started a blog about 2 years ago just writing about my own very personal sexual experiences and, you know, giving people, because I feel like the more open I can be about my sexuality, that invites other people to be open as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, not everybody is as open, but at least gives people an opportunity to learn from each other and, you know, there's all different kinds of ways of expressing our sexuality.
Right. And one thing you asked was about kind of some of the stories that surfaced within the performances. And I mean, again, you know, it's funny because people might think that, oh, because it's a performance project on disability and sexuality and it's, you know, and, you know, we centralize queer folks and people
mm-hmm.
of color.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be like a narrow bandwidth, so to speak. And it's so not like it's such a giant cross section of experiences and peoples, you know? So, I mean, everything, the stories surface from, you know, people that experience their sexuality primarily solo because of the ways in which society doesn't reflect us and the way we may not be engaged mm-hmm. with other people sexually.
Sure.
So, you know, it's basically around self-love and all the way to people that are sex workers and their experience as sex workers. You know, we're thinking about doing a parent's element to it, like really centralizing that 1 year, you know, for folks either that are parents that have disabilities or whatever their relationship is. I mean, we're all somebody's kid, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, you know, those stories have come up a lot. There's been quite a bit of referencing around how people reconcile violence. In our histories, because there's such a high rate of sexual violence in particular mm-hmm. against people with disabilities. I think the statistics are 7 out of 10 people with disabilities are sexually exploited before the age of 18.
Wow.
And this is, you know, all disabilities. So it includes people with cognitive disabilities,
mm-hmm.
You know, physical disabilities, quote, psychiatric disabilities. And given those rates, I mean, obviously that's something, I mean, in this society in general, a lot of us, you know, negotiate violence. And some of the stories are pretty awesome, actually, that come out of how we survive. I mean, everything from, like, every year there's pretty explicit SM content in SINs. Everything from, you know, puppy training, dog training. Last year, it was 2009, there was a scene that was this person was reconciling his medical abuse, mm-hmm. right? The piece opened up with memories of him being in an institution, and he goes onto the stage and meets a pro dom, and they end up doing a medical scene where he ends up masturbating and, you know, being, you know, there's a whole, like, scene around it with, I mean, he's literally getting off on his medical gown. And, and I mean, it's, you know, this is how we reconcile it, you know.
That's great.
And so, I mean, it's both hot and, because it's real. I mean, that is what real people do, you know. It's like, you have to deal with your stuff, you know. So it's, so people might reconcile and balance that way. Other people might, you know, be a little less hands-on and, you know, down and gritty with it, and might just, you know, be more descriptive and do spoken word around their experiences of violence. I mean, it really ranges. Yeah, it's fun. It's quite fun, and I feel like it really enriches us in the process. You know, not just people in the project, but also the audience and everyone that engages with it, because it offers us a more complex way of looking at our bodies and how we move in the world.
Beautiful. Yeah, it sounds like it's just such a healing process for so many people, not only the performers, but the community as well.
Yeah. It's kind of strange. Some people leave the audience crying. It's almost like after being in church. Mm-hmm. It's really intense. Mm-hmm. You know, people are like really moved because, I mean, as you said, like as we kind of bear witness to our own healing, it opens space for other people too as well. Mm-hmm. So the vibe is definitely in the air, you know, It's interesting because as a project, like, we really have to be responsible about how we do, how we explore, how we're open, how we engage in these topics, and also not sexualize each other all the time. Because, you know, it would be kind of easy to do that, right?
It's very easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's, you know, we have to be kind of responsible and mature and model that, especially to the younger folks. How do we not, you know, try to, like, get down with each other all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, people are going to have attractions, and there is going to be, you know, stuff developing between people.
Sure.
So how do we do that responsibly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a fine line you have to, like, or you have to balance that line, mm-hmm. I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, with some people, it's going to be way too much. And for other people, it's just going to kind of feed this hunger, or satisfy this hunger that we have to be, you know, that we're sexual beings and we really want to feel held and feel heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beautiful.
For listeners out there who are either disabled or have a relationship with a disabled person, something that they deal with a lot is isolating and not knowing how to reach out from two people that are living it and out in the world doing things. What's the first thing someone that's stuck in that isolation type of thing can do to connect with people like you guys or other people for support or fun or for love?
Well, that's a kind of big
topic.
That's
a good question.
It's a great question. I mean, why don't you go first?
Yeah, well, I'll just say, you know, one of the things that I've started up is a sexuality and disability support group. And that's going to be happening, we don't have the exact dates yet, but it'll be happening at the new Ed Roberts campus in Berkeley through the Center for Independent Living. And so that's going to be a monthly group that people can come. You can check out my website for more information at somaevolution.org, and also the Center for Independent Living should have some things posted. But, you know, bringing communities of people together to really have conversations and support each other, I think is one avenue. Yeah, I'm trying to think what are some other things that people can do?
I mean, I think that, you know, as you mentioned, isolation is a key mm-hmm. feature around, I think, many different forms of oppression.
Yeah.
And I think the internet has been a really connecting place for a lot of people.
Yes.
I know, for example, on Facebook, there's a group for, sick and disabled queers, for example, you know, there's a lot of different, ways of interacting through the internet. And I think that's a good thing. It also still, I think, to me, at least for my specific experience, it underscores some degree of isolation because I'm actually still at the end of the day dealing with a computer, not a person.
Right.
I mean, for me specifically, because I am in the Bay Area, grew up in San Francisco, I didn't seek out community within disability. I was in sex positive communities and really insisted that the spaces actually address disability.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that I sought out kind of mirroring around sexuality within disability community.
Mm-hmm.
I I put out the hope, which wasn't always met in other, like, so specifically for me, like both sex positive scenes and also SM scenes, that that they be accessible, that people with disabilities be included. There's, you know, and that isn't always met. You know, some people are like, yeah, no.
You know? Right. It's challenging, though. Yeah. It is challenging because I've been looking at, I'm kind of interested in the whole SM theme or SM, you know, scene. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm checking out these different spaces and, hey, are they wheelchair accessible? And, you know, I'm really up for, like, creating fun, you know, exploratory play parties where people can get, you know, sensual touch. And oftentimes they're, you know, they have steps, and right. It's really frustrating. So it's trying to find those places.
Rafe, explain SM for those virgin ears out there.
Sorry.
Actually, why don't you explain it? You could explain it better than I can.
I think.
Yeah.
So SM is an acronym for sadomasochism.
Well, yeah.
But it really is around power play, essentially.
Yes.
And it's around when, you know, when in interactions, in sexual interactions, sometimes it can be really fun to kind of essentially negotiate terms of who is controlling the interactions and the overt there. And there's both overt control and covert or framing and control. And I mean, it's, you know, oftentimes people hear the frames topping and bottoming in association with SM. And I mean, it's a whole world of, and that's like seven shows in itself. It's a whole world of a type of play, which isn't, I mean, people I think often think of like, you know, chains and leather. Mm-hmm. And that can be like an element of fetish within SM. But SM is really about power play. And it's really interesting because as a person with a disability, like, I'm very aware of what physical power I do or don't have. I mean, I can clear a room in a second. Mm-hmm. Like, I can go in and people will, like, freak out because I walk in in a chair. And, like, you know, that's an interesting kind of power. Everyone is now frightened.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Or, you know, as somebody that's female body, the kind of power that I can play with, or somebody that, whatever. I mean, there's, you know, so we all are wielding power at all times, you know?
Sure.
So anyway, SM is a fun way to articulate that. And what you were saying, you know, about a play party, I'm really hopeful. I don't think it would be under formal sins invalid, but like maybe just as an offshoot that we're trying to put together, a friend within Sin, Seeley Quest, and I want to put together like the first all crip play party.
Well, so do I.
Yeah, awesome.
We
should talk.
This morning about putting an all crip, kind of an ecstatic dance together where we do adaptive yoga, a check-in meditation, and then just get boogie dancing.
Oh, that'd be
get
fun,
it
yeah.
fun.
Yeah. Which would be different from a play party, I think.
No, it would definitely be different.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That could lead to a play party, you know, in stages.
A venue. We have a venue lined up, too. I mean, there's actually a lot of... we should talk outside
the
show.
We should definitely talk. Yeah, I have a spot over in Oakland I'm looking at next weekend. So,
So people should check out... It sounds like your website, and also the Sins Invalid website, which is SinsInvalid, SinsInvalid.org. We have a blog there, and we'll put up stuff like, you know, for example, if there's a get together, you know, we'll be on our blog.
Good.
Or, you know, I mean, I think there are ways of people interfacing and interacting. You know, and some of it is like we're talking about, we have to create it ourselves.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So it's not even like, what do we seek out? I mean, we have to be what we're seeking
right.
at the end of the day.
And that's what I'm doing right now. I have a website that's not quite up yet, but it'll be sexability.org. And it's going to be a portal for people to get all kinds of resources on sexuality and disability.
Mm-hmm.
And I plan to collaborate with a lot of other, you know, leaders out there that are doing work in that area. So, I think the internet is a really powerful way for people to connect. And that's how I've connected with so many people, whether it's on Facebook. There's another, you know, great community on there. It's called Sexability. Yes, I like to have sex. Yes, I can F, you know, blank. But it's like a really great opportunity for people, because a lot of people are isolated, to connect with people. But then creating the venue where people can meet, you know, and actually have conversations.
Yeah.
I think that's conversations and lead to other kinds of interactions.
And I feel like, you know, part of the work that we're doing at SINS is to shift the frame, how can I put it, like almost like the visual framework around sexuality, because what's considered sexual visually you know, for those of us, you know, that use our eyes is really quite narrow. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because of that, people in broader cultural settings don't see people with disabilities as sexual, partly because we're not within a certain
right.
you know, visual framework. And I think that putting, not to, I mean, I don't really support like, oh, everyone should be objectified at all times. Like that mm-hmm. doesn't actually make sense to me. But, you know, when we're picturing who is a possible partner, right? I mean, we should also be thinking of, you know, every kind of body, you know, and I mean, as somebody that's queer, I mean, I'm quite lucky to be able to think of all kinds of people, you know, and mm-hmm. all kinds of ways. And so I'm saying that to say that I feel like part of what we have to do also in terms of being seen sexually is reframe this broader debate. It's partly about what connections we can make with each other individually.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I know it's a lot easier for me to go into a majority able-bodied space if people have thought of disability and sexuality in the same breath before, mm-hmm. as opposed to if the first time they're thinking about it is if they see me mm-hmm. go in the room. If there's been some kind of psychic space created prior, mm-hmm. it's helpful. So I think putting out cultural work essentially is a part of it as well.
I totally agree. It's, you know, for myself, you know, being able-bodied and then becoming disabled is very different than mm-hmm. the way you grew up. And, you know, I had a body very much like Rob, you know, very fit. I was into yoga, you know, and I could move in certain ways. And now, you know, I can't. But what I've learned, what's been interesting is that while my physical body's changed, my energetic body's grown so much.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is there's ways in which I can feel other people's energy
mm-hmm.
in a way where I can feel. And for me, sex is like way more than, you know, what I call PIV sex, penis and vagina, or, you know,
friction.
Friction or mm-hmm. genital contact. It's really more about feeling another person's energy. And I notice, you know, there's levels of attraction are so different for me. Like there's some people I'm attracted to just like intellectually or emotionally,
mm-hmm.
you know, physically, and even my boundaries around physical attraction has shifted. It's mm-hmm. been very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And I guess I say that because, you know, oftentimes being able-bodied, we have certain parameters. We say, oh, I'm looking for this kind of partner and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. But it's also interesting when you kind of broaden that, your view of sex, that it really allows for you to feel intimacy and connection,
mm-hmm.
you know, beyond just what you consider something physically attractive.
Yeah, and yes. to feel pleasure more broadly as well.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, because if pleasure is really always and only located in one way or one type of action,
yep.
then, yeah, that's kind of sad because then
there's it a is. Lot of things you're that missing
are,
out.
There are a lot of things get
yeah,
cut out.
Yeah. All right, well, it's getting hot in here. We're going to cool it down with some music and a quick break. More with Sins and Valid after this commercial.
Amongst yourselves. I haven't gone anywhere, but out of my body. Reach out and you'll touch me. Make effort to speak to me. Call out and you'll hear me. Be happy for me. Thank you.
You're listening to KPOO 89.5 San Francisco. This is Reality Sandwich with Ray Ferrick Biggs, and we have Patty Byrne on the show today from Sins Invalid, and we're talking about sexuality, disability, and beauty, and all kinds of other juicy topics. So welcome back.
Thank you. And again, thanks for having us here, for having me here.
You're welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yeah,
it's a fun way to start off the new year.
Right.
Great. So we've been talking about a lot of different things. Patty mentioned on the break to talk, we're going to talk a little bit about beauty and what beauty is, and you know, all different ways that beauty gets portrayed in the media. There's certain images of it, but let's speak a little bit about that.
Well, you know, Sins Invalid, the tagline after it is an unshamed claim to beauty in the face of invisibility.
Mm-hmm. Right? I love that. That's so. Right.
And the idea of it, I mean, it's kind of a mouthful, so we really just say sins, but the idea of an unshamed claim to beauty is that we are, you know, again, so inundated with images around what is not just sexual, but what is beautiful, that, you know, people go to huge extremes to kind of to fit within these really narrow parameters of normative looking. And for some of us, that's just, I mean, not only is it, would it be economically impossible to get 29 different face surgeries or whatever it is that people are doing, but, I mean, it's just not, you know, not just economically, but physically. Like, there's no way that I am going to have, like, a, quote, normative-looking body. And so this idea of beauty is so narrow, it actually doesn't reflect all of who we are as people, who we are as communities, who I am as a person. And I mean, you know, beauty is really, to me, you know, beauty changes over our lifetime. Like, someone who's 5 years old is beautiful, and they're very different from the way a 16-year-old is going to be beautiful, very different from the way a 45-year-old is going to be beautiful, different from the way an 85-year-old is going to be beautiful. And that doesn't take away from any of those, you know, ways of embodiment. I mean, it's, we look differently, we move differently, we are different depending upon our experience and our actual physical structures at different ages. And to say that one person, one community, one look, one age has a corner on beauty doesn't really, to me, look at the, I don't know, like how phenomenal we are as beings, as people. Mm. And, you know, I think one of the things we try to encourage in the project and you know, in the workshops and everywhere, you know, that we go is that we recognize who we are as amazing, beautiful beings. And as we can appreciate ourselves, I think it becomes easier for us to appreciate other people and for other people to appreciate ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I know it sounds cliche in some ways. You know, we often hear, oh, you have to love yourself for other people to love you. It's, yes, that's cliche. And there's such a strong core of truth in actually acknowledging who and how we are and allowing other people to interact with us in the knowledge of who and how we are.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's cliche, but it's cliche because there's pure science behind it.
Right.
We walk around resonating at a vibrational level.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have a certain vibrational level, let's call it happy vibration, it connects to other happy vibrations that are out there. If you have the negative vibration, you walk around, it's going to connect to that.
Mm-hmm.
So cliche or not, the proof is in the pudding. You know, you feel good about yourself, you give yourself self-love, and you get it in the streets, you get it from your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So work on yourself, number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's also just in my background of studying somatics, which is really about the mind-body connection, it's also that our bodies, you know, when we become aware that if our bodies are like kind of collapsed and collapse forward, that we're going to feel a certain way, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then if we can work on, like, opening our bodies and whatever that looks like, that allows for us to open up to other people, allows for us to feel more open and joyful, and more heart-centered. So just being aware of, like, you know, noticing what happens when you feel length in your body, you know, just feeling yourself tall. Oftentimes we feel like we have more dignity.
Mm-hmm.
If you can feel the width in your body, you can feel yourself opening up to other people, or if you're more collapsed. So just being aware of that, I think, is the first key. And that will also, you know, you'll attract people when you're open, you know. And sometimes you want to be more contained, but I think that's an interesting thing for listeners to think about.
And just to hearken back to something that you said, I think it's more than just our physical bodies, it's our energetic bodies.
Totally.
You know, because I think some people, you know, may in fact structurally, you know, might be curved down, or some people might structurally be, you know, shorter stature, et cetera.
Yes.
And it's so much not about our the actual kind of physical body alone, but about where energetically we're putting our energy. You know, are we putting our energy kind of focusing it in? Like we might when we're on BART and we're sleepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or if we're, you know, going down the sidewalk, are we actually trying to open up and connect with people, or are we in a rush and just don't want to deal?
Yeah.
You know, and I really respect people have make when people are making choices around that. I think, you know, there's sometimes a need for us to protect our energy.
Absolutely.
And sometimes I think because of oppression, we don't always make a choice. We're just conditioned to do that.
Right.
And I think especially as people with disabilities, we're conditioned oftentimes to be closed in on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of your questions earlier was about how we connect. And I think really, like, that's really where it starts, to connect energetically with the world. And there's a quote that we use in Sins. Beauty always recognizes itself.
Mm.
Meaning that, you know, when we are vibrating with kind of our own appreciation of ourselves and of the world, that we get that mirrored back.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely. It's like a tuning fork.
Yeah.
Like my friend Reed Mahalko mentioned, he did a great little workshop on energetic sex, and he's like, okay, here's the proof of energetic sex. We take a tuning fork, and we hit that tuning fork, and it starts vibrating at what, let's say, a C note. Somebody else is in the room, and they're a C note. They're going to pick up on that vibration. So it's like if we can tune and allow that vibration of love to move out in the world, you know, other people are going to pick up on that, and maybe they start vibrating as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I think love is not just a feeling, but it's a generative act.
I love that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
That's
an act.
Right. That's
so,
right.
So, like, generate love and send. I like to do this all the time. Roll down in my chair and I just send love out to people. Just send love out to people.
Mm-hmm.
And see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel a lot more love within myself.
Right.
Right? And then hopefully that impacts others.
It's interesting because it makes me think about sexuality as a practice, not just an act, but as a practice.
Sure.
You know, as I mean, some people might think of practices as meditative practices, which mean that there's stillness, which I think there can be around sexuality, but there's also, not stillness, whatever the opposite of that
is.
Yeah,
movement.
That's a moving, living meditation, practice, ritual, whatever.
Yeah.
Something I've learned to do, my own practice before my injury, I studied Tantra for years and learned how to move energy. And so, you know, I'm not with a partner right now, but what I do is I've learned this practice of moving energy within my body, circulating kind of sensual erotic energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I do this primarily because I have chronic pain. And so by doing this practice, it helps to move those endorphins and I feel good and I feel good. I'm not just trying to get turned on and get off, but it moves that life force energy that we all have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I believe that life force energy is not only just pleasurable, but is healing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I really, really believe that for myself and wanting to share this with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a practice that I'm going to be teaching people this upcoming year.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, it also makes me think of one of the workshops that we did was Noemi Sohn and I facilitated a workshop on, I think it was called Come As You Are, and it was about, and it was around the sacred erotic body. Mm. And we talked about all the things that were taught. So one of the exercises we did was around how we kind of flip a script a little bit. And, you know, we're taught what commandments around disability are we taught, right? And so we wrote down all these, you know, we're taught, thou shalt not look upon the disabled body, thou shalt not reveal the disabled body, thou shalt not, you know, be attracted to the older body, blah, blah, blah. All these basically absurd, you know, oppressive, ableist frameworks. And then what are the principles that we want to live by was a kind of response to that we worked on for the rest of the workshop. And, I mean, it's something that, you know, listeners can do as well, because I think we have to acknowledge what we're trying to rid ourselves of and have a, in some ways, some ritual, so to speak, of like saying, okay, these are my blocks, and how can I start to release those? And then start embracing some of that, or practicing, rather, some of the connection with ourselves as well. I really like the idea of principles of erotic power, and how we can actually manifest those in our lives. There's a lot of, it just makes me think of all the different kind of practices and workshops that we could play with.
Yay, I'm excited. Yeah. Let's get this out in the world so that people can connect. And it just makes me think, like, I think so much within the world of being a disabled person, but there's so many people in the world that walk around that look, they're able-bodied, but inside they have all these, disabled, belief systems, or... the people walk around with, chronic pain. I mean, there's like so many people in this world that live with things that disable them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. One of the things that we do in SINS is really broaden the definition around disability. Mm-hmm. So many people understand disability to be, like the iconic wheelchair symbol sign on a blue placard.
Yeah.
And actually, a pushback on that framework has, been offered by, folks that have been doing disability rights work around a social model of disability, where what's actually disabling is when whole sectors of people, because we don't fit in a normative framework, either our bodies or our psyches or our cognitive processes, are marginalized, and that is actually the disabling process, is a marginalization of people that are non-normative.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be people with chronic pain. And we work with a lot, in SINS, we work with a lot of people with chronic illnesses, folks that might have, epilepsy or environmental or chemical injury or other non-visible disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people, I'm sure even listening, might in fact, like you're saying, have conditions which have disabled them in some
mm-hmm.
way, but because of stigma around disability, don't want to think about themselves as having disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say for myself, I've been in a wheelchair all of my life. And it's been very obvious to me that I've had a disability all of my life, obviously.
Sure.
And at the same time, politically, I don't think I came out politically as a person with a disability until well into my 20s.
Mm.
It was just like a condition that I lived with, but I didn't understand disability politically.
Mm.
And I think there's a difference, and that's again a whole other hour.
Sure. Yeah. We'll have you back on the show. We could talk more about this. Great. Awesome.
What's coming to my mind as you speak is, we in this whack Western society, we honor those who we deem non-disabled,
mm-hmm.
which are like guys who make $100,000 a year, work 80-hour weeks, don't see their families, hate what they do for a living, and that's supposed to be what we go for. it seems really backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the subjective nomenclature that we use is one of the biggest issues. How can people start using better words to describe what they are and to interface themselves with different communities?
And it seems to me that one of the, there's power in the word, right? And one of the things that we've done with SINS is understand disability politically,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just a physical reality.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of our physical reality, we talk about embodiment. We talk about, what's considered normative, not normative, but we really talk about embodiment and beauty, because we're all in our bodies in different ways. And that's, regardless of age and movement and capacity, I think what you're saying around how we understand something kind of ends up crystallizing that concept. I mean, I want to really centralize the fact that we're all embodied, mm-hmm. and we're all beautiful, and have that be the starting place,
mm-hmm.
And then move out
That's
from there.
That's great. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, just helping people see the beauty within themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is the first thing. Yeah.
I really want to invite people to something. Can I do that now?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, let's do that.
Something...
We have a few more minutes.
Yeah,
so
why don't you... just throw up on us. Give us all your information. How can people get in touch with you? What's going on?
What's going on? What's happening?
So there's this awesome show coming up that would be a good opener for people if they're interested in SINS and Vowed and the work around embodiment and disability and sexuality. And we're calling it Resident Alien. And it's the show of our artists in residence. We've had a program going for 10 months of 8 emerging artists with disabilities, and they're using music, spoken word, wearable sculpture, photography. It's going to rock. And they're,
wow.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
I'm really excited to see it because I'm actually not the artistic director of this show.
Okay.
Nomi Lam is. And okay. Nomi Lam is an amazing creative force. She is a vocalist and a songwriter and a brilliant, brilliant creative force. And she's the artistic director. So I actually get to be in the audience this time and not run anything.
Nice.
Which is cool because usually I run the shows. And so Nomi Lam's the director of this one, and it's going to be January 28th and 29th. And the 29th is the ASL Interpreted Night. It's at 8 o'clock both nights, and it's at the Mission Cultural Center, which is in the Mission District in San Francisco. It's 2868 Mission Street. It's between 24th and 25th Streets. You know, it's sliding scale. No one turned away from lack of funds, $10 to $15. And there's going to be 8 different artists, and that's going to be an awesome show. I'm so curious and so excited for that show.
Cool.
And then we have our annual show, which if folks didn't have a chance to see, or people might have heard about Sins and Vod, we usually do our shows in October. And actually, as an expression of disability justice, I was feeling crapped out, like absurdly crapped out last year.
As a lot of people were.
So we postponed the show rather than have me end up in the hospital.
Good for you.
Yeah, it was
good
a big deal. It was huge. Yeah. It was huge. And you know, our funders and the venue and everybody really worked with us to make that an option. But we are there and so bad. April 8th, 9th, and 10th. And that's at Z-Space. It'll be our first time at Z-Space at Theater Arteau.
Okay.
And that's a funky, super cool theater on 17th and Florida in San Francisco.
Huh, cool.
And it's got a beautiful, huge space. And it's technically 450 Florida, but it's a warehouse on Florida and 17th.
Cool.
And again, April 8th, 9th, and 10th. And, you know, it's going to be kind of the usual high quality, very, very provocative performance.
Mm-hmm.
Again, themes are often, you know, extremely explicit. It's amazing to me. Some people bring children to the shows, mm-hmm. at least the first year they did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just interesting because it's a show on disability and sexuality, people thought it was child appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it was about, for example, black gay men and sexuality,
mm-hmm.
they would not bring children. But because of social projections
right.
around disability, people brought children. Please. I would encourage people to use discretion around the age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that are of consenting mm-hmm. age should definitely come. And it's a party. It's a giant
Sounds
party.
Like fun.
Cool, cool.
Can't
yeah.
wait.
Great. So April 8th, 9th, and 10th, Theater Arteau, and January 28th and 29th at the Mission Cultural Center. And then obviously our website, sinsinvalid.org. People can check it out, drop us a line. We're always interested in hearing from new artists or new opportunities to collaborate. And new
Good.
Folks to blog.
Very cool.
Good. I'm just going to do a mention. My friends over at Axis Dance Company, there is a show coming up by Joe Good. And you can just go to axisdance.org for all the details coming up, I think, either next weekend and the weekend after. So you can get more details about that.
Cool. Yeah. If you would like to get a hold of myself, you can go to rudayoga.com, RUDDHA, like Buddha, but with a R. Upcoming events this month, the 13th, 6:30, mm-hmm. it's going to be a magical night at the new Purusha Center, 38th and Balboa. $12 to get in, hour and a half of yoga, meditation, and then we're going to dance hard. Until
yeah.
Night. So come, bring a happy vibe and network and meet other beautiful, awesome people.
Cool. All right. Well, this has been a great show. And again, I'm Rafe Eric Biggs, and my website is Soma Evolution, SOMAEvolution.org, for more events coming up. And we will see you again very soon.
Peace out.
All right.
Next time.